1985 is when Jerry Boulet first authored Lease Plus. Did you know Jerry back then?
Yeah, I did. It was Jerry worked for a company called Metro Leasing Group.
Right, right.
And Jerry started. Metro Leasing Group was an equipment finance company.
Okay.
And that was based out of Omaha. And Jerry developed a software product because he went in the marketplace and tried to find something that he wanted to buy, but everything was like really expensive.
Okay.
And he didn't think that there was a product that really fit his business.
What he was trying to do.
What he was trying to do to start with. And he was a complete full service lessor, but he was a small lessor.
Okay.
And most systems at that point in time in 1985 were for very large companies.
Sure.
So you had to buy like a mini computer or mainframe type system, and his business was just too small
sure.
to invest in that kind of money. So Jerry and his staff designed a software system for small leasing companies that he could use.
Yeah.
And while he was doing that, he thought, well, there's probably, in order to offset the cost of doing all that development himself, he said, well, there must be a marketplace out there for a solution like this.
Yeah, I can't be the only one who needs something like this.
Right, yeah. So I think the more he got into developing it, the more, and developing back then was almost like writing down on a piece of paper like what the system should sort of do, like what your manual business process was.
Yeah,
they were using spreadsheets and all kinds of different things, and they were just basically trying to automate that. And Jerry and his staff kind of developed that.
So I imagine there was probably not a lot of companies like this in Omaha at the time.
Yeah. I was working for a software company in Omaha called Word and Data Processing Products.
Okay.
And my background previously was, prior to Lease Team, I worked for a company called Reynolds and Reynolds, and we were selling data processing systems to car dealerships.
Okay.
And basically, part of what I did is I had a territory in, which was all of Nebraska and half of Iowa, and we sold data processing to car dealerships. And part of one of the things that we did many times is we would finance the sale of this hardware and software. And remember, back then in 1985, it was like much more hardware oriented,
right.
You know, big systems and some software, and you'd sell them to these car dealerships. And a lot of times these guys wanted to finance it. So,
okay.
Reynolds had their own financing company called Reyna Financial, so
yeah.
I kind of understood equipment finance or lease finance. But I also, sometimes they would finance locally, and so we would finance through Metro Leasing, through Jerry's company.
Okay.
And so I got a chance to meet Jerry and know Jerry, and then over a period of time, the company that I work for, Jerry was running his business at Metro Leasing. And he really needed to have a software partner to develop the software. So he was designing it, but Word and Data Processing Products actually was doing the development of it to have a complete product. And then Word and Data Processing Products also was marketing the system and selling the system. And
sure.
When I left Reynolds, I went to work for Word and Data Processing Products, and that I managed that business.
Okay, so that's kind of how you came into touch with the Lease Plus software and stuff.
Right. At the because Jerry had Jerry was the designer of the product, and so basically Jerry owned half of the company.
Okay.
And it was called Lease Solutions.
Okay.
Okay, that's what the product was called.
Yeah.
Lease, and the company was called Lease Solutions, and the product was called Lease Plus. And Lease Solutions was half owned by Jerry Boulet and half owned by Word and Data Processing Products.
Okay, sure.
And so I work for Word and Data, and I manage that from a sales and marketing perspective, that product line.
Sure. So what was it that kind of took you from managing that to essentially purchasing that?
Yeah, what happened is I was in the management group at Word and Data Processing. I was pretty young, but I managed a couple of different business lines, and this was one of the business lines that I managed. And Word and Data Processing Products was a big Burroughs hardware provider and software provider, and
Okay.
they had a dealer network, okay, that they would sell hardware and software to that they developed. And then we had our own vertical markets, such as this leasing marketplace that I managed and I ran. And there was a larger hardware and software company out in Colorado Springs that wanted to purchase Word and Data. And what ended up happening was Word and Data got sold
Okay.
to R&D Systems, and they sold their hardware and software distribution business, but they didn't really want the leasing side
Okay.
because it wasn't big enough for them back at that point in time.
Sure.
And so myself and Phil Lieber, who was actually also worked at Word and Data, and Phil managed a big part of the software business over there as well. We bought the Lease Plus product from Word and Data Processing Products because they had that asset to sell. R&D didn't want it. They were selling the rest of their business to R&D
Sure.
Systems, and so we acquired that software system in a sale for between us and Word and Data. And one of the things that happened beforehand that I think is important is that when we were at Word and Data, we were minority owners of Word and Data. Both
Okay.
Phil was, I was, and then the owners were the majority owners of the business. It was a very entrepreneurial type of business, and they always asked us every year, what are your goals individually as people, and it wasn't necessarily to work for them for the rest of our lives.
Sure.
We wanted to have our own business someday. Both Phil and I did, and we let them know that. And so when this situation happened, in order for them to leverage and get the most value out of it, they really had to sell it to somebody that was sort of invested in it, knew the marketplace to a certain extent, because if they tried to sell it outside to somebody else, the value that they would get for it would be not very much.
Right, because they
So,
probably aren't going to see like this as being anything useful. It's kind of this little side.
yeah, and so they were basically left with, they had sold basically three quarters of their business, and they were left with this leasing software vertical that R&D Systems is like, no, we don't want that because we don't know anything about that. One of the things they asked is if I was interested in moving to Colorado Springs, and I had just gotten married, and I said, no, I'm not interested in like moving out there. But I said I would be interested potentially in buying this software product, and R&D quickly just said, okay, you can do whatever you want. You're not coming along with this sale. One of the executive managers actually moved to Colorado Springs with the sale, and one didn't. They just kind of left the business, but they had this asset left over, and Phil and I decided that we wanted to acquire that, and so we negotiated a situation with them to acquire the brand name, to acquire the intellectual property, the software and things like that. Years old. I didn't have
Newly
a
married, and
newly married. I didn't have a lot of money. So, I put a second mortgage on our house, and Phil did the same, and we came up with I think the sale price was something like, I don't know, $200,000 or something like that, and we came up with $60,000 down, and then they agreed to finance the rest over the next I think the next 5 years, 4 years, and then we would make monthly payments to them every month. And the previous owner, we were supposed to pay her over, I think, 4 years, and we ended up basically paying her off like in a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That
So
was a good investment then for you.
well, yeah, I mean, we at that time we had 11 customers that we had acquired, and no real book of business or anything like that, but we were selling both hardware and software at the time, and we made a go of it. And the thing that we were good at is we were good at marketing and sales. And in our company was Phil and myself and two developers and two support people. And
Did those people all come from Word and Data when that
yeah,
got bought out?
they did. They came from Word and Data. because everybody at Word and Data was kind of losing their jobs,
sure.
or, unless they wanted to move to Colorado Springs. And so we took the two people that actually had worked on our product.
Okay.
And it was myself and Phil Lieber. And Phil's wife actually was one of our developers for the product. And so she came with us, and then another guy came with us, and we started our company that way.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Was your wife kind of pretty excited about that, or was she kind of anxious about that? Like, you're doing what to our mortgage?
It's when you're 30 years old and you're young like that, I remember going over to my father-in-law's house. And my wife said, "You're going to have to explain this to my dad, just to make sure that," because my father-in-law was a business person, and the first thing he said to me is like, "Are you crazy?" You know, and it's like, "No, I'm not crazy. You know, I'm going to start my own business."
Yeah.
And my wife was working at the time, and thank God she was, because we got our health insurance and everything where my wife was working at the time, because we didn't really have those types of things as we were bootstrapping our company.
Of course, yeah.
And we got a good lease on a building space from Wayne Simmons from FBG Services downtown. And okay. So he had a floor, and Frank Lebeds was his CFO at the time. And Frank helped us out and helped do some of our accounting and things like that us to kind of get us up and get us going. But we started it. Yeah, it was like, taking out equity out of your mortgage isn't probably the first thing that was on my wife's mind. She's a fairly conservative person, a very nice person. But we decided to do that. We had like $15,000, I think, in our bank account that we had saved. And we took another $15,000 of equity out of our house. And so I came up with $30,000, and Phil came up with $30,000. And so we started our business with like $60,000.
Wow, so you guys pretty much went all in on this. Like, it's got to work.
Yeah, and when you go all in, you're kind of like focused on making sure that it's going to work.
Oh, sure.
Working hard to get it done.
Yeah. So it sounds like you kind of had this entrepreneurial mindset.
Yeah.
Or is that something you just felt like you feel like you've always had?
Well, my mother owned her own business. I was good friends with people whose families owned their own business, small business owners. You know, I worked at that point in time, up until that time, for different companies and corporations. And I worked for some larger companies, and I worked for some smaller companies. And I never really felt like the large company environment was a great place for me, because I'm fairly entrepreneurial and I like a challenge and I like new things and I like to do new things and I like learning.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of like a lifelong learner. So it's not like school was sort of important for me, but I always liked being like in a business or in a job or things like that and figuring out how things were, you know, how things worked. So I always sort of had an entrepreneurial spirit. And even when I was in college, I was sort of like brainstorming on different ideas and different things that I could do to run my own business someday.
Yeah.
And so I really liked that. And I knew at some point in time I wanted to run my own business. And so, I think that there were a number of trigger items, you know, in my background with my parents, and also with friends of my parents that were small business owners. And then I wanted to do well wherever I was at, and I liked challenges, but I also found that I didn't really like working for a large company because there's a lot of politics and a lot of other things going on there that I was just kind of like, that isn't for me. And in smaller companies, I found I work for a couple of small companies that I think really helped me learn about business and also learn about how to treat people the way that I'd like to. So I had some bad experiences, and I said, I will never treat people like that.
I don't want that.
Yeah. But then I also, you kind of learn like, you know, what makes you tick and how to work with employees. And that always interested me. So I have sort of like, my background is in sales and marketing, but I have a very strong feeling for customer service, taking care of customers properly. Customer relations is really important to me. I wouldn't call myself a developer, but I understand development and I understand software design and how a software company works.
Sure.
And that's just by being in the business, you learn
Yeah.
if you want to. So I have a lot of, I'm not a jack of all trades and a master of none. I think I really have a lot of focus in the marketing and sales side, and that's really my forte. But there's other parts of our business that I know pretty well.
But you really understand the big picture
I
part of
understand
it,
the big
yeah.
picture, and I also know what I'm good at, and I also know what I'm not good at, which is really important because later on, as our company evolves, bringing in people like Russ and as my business partner are really strategic things,
Yeah,
okay?
absolutely.
Because I'm not really strong on financial planning, and I'm not really
Yeah.
strong on accounting, and I'm pretty good with strategy, but budgeting and things like that are not foreign to me, but I'm not really, that's not my strength.
Right.
So what you want to have is just like sometimes opposites attract and do well in business. That's the same thing. So people that have a certain strength, you don't necessarily want to have two people with the same strength
Right.
working together because,
You want to find someone who fills those gaps in for you that, yeah.
So my strength was in sales and marketing. And Phil's strength was in sales and marketing too, which is good as far as growing from a sales perspective,
Yeah.
but it's not necessarily ideal from a customer service perspective. I have a lot of strength in that area. It's not good at all from a development perspective, and
Yeah.
it's not good at all from a financial perspective
Sure.
from budgeting, planning, those types of things, kind of the detail work. So, when Russ joined with us, he really has that strong background in those
Yeah,
areas. So that's really what creates like it's like pieces of the puzzle that creates a good fit. Development is something that he's very good at.
yeah.
Design, he's very detail oriented. He's really good at financial planning and budgeting and the things that we need to do contract wise.
Yeah.
He's really, really strong in those areas. And that strength kind of offsets weaknesses that I have, and so together it makes a very
That's a very
strong,
good fit.
a very, very good fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually met Russ when I was 14 years old. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So Russ's family and my family became friends. I got introduced to Russ through a friend of mine that was a friend of Russ's. And I lived in a North Omaha neighborhood called Florence, and Russ lived in a neighborhood called Ponca, which is
Sure.
just north of Florence. And so we'd play sports together when we were younger. And then as we got more involved in junior high, he went to Nathan Hale, I went to McMillan. We were competitive in the
Yeah,
sport and
yeah.
on the sports side. And we played a lot of baseball and other sports together. Then I became friends of his, and then I went to high school with him, and I went to college with him.
Okay.
And so I've known Russ for a long
Wow,
time,
yeah.
and I've known Russ's family for since I was 14 also. And so my parents became friends of his parents and did things together and things like that.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
I'm sort of that way. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that I have some like lifelong friendships that go way, way back. I mean, one of my best friends I've known since we went from kindergarten all the way through high school together. And he actually is business partners with my brother
Oh,
in a
that's
separate
funny.
business. And so, kind of what you do is you kind of create a bond. We played sports together when we were in high school, we played sports together when we were in college, not at the college level, but like softball and all kinds of other different things, hockey.
Did you guys go to UNO here then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we went to Lincoln first,
Okay.
and then Russ actually got married while he was in college and decided he wanted to move back to Omaha. I wasn't really thrilled about moving back to Omaha, but I did move back to Omaha, and then we both finished up at UNO. And so Russ worked for his dad. His dad owned a construction company and was a mason,
Okay.
and he did that. And then I came back and had a variety of different jobs, more service-oriented type of
Sure.
jobs, that's we've known each other for a long time. We're sort of like brothers to a certain
Yeah,
extent
of course, yeah.
because I've known him that long, and I know his family, and his brothers, and I know his parents, who are now passed away, and but you know, we have a very close relationship because of
Of
that,
course,
you
yeah.
know. So, and that's kind of how our there's a core group of people that I grew up with, and we're still friends with each other, and some of us are actually business partners together, like Russ and I are, and my brother and one of my best friends is a business partner
Yeah.
in a different business, and my older brother and about four of his other friends, they're all engineers. They all work for OPPD as engineers. They're all retired now. You know,
Yeah.
it's kind of like once one gets in, the rest of them are getting
Yep.
in, right? And they're all working together and that type of
Well,
thing.
that's kind of just the story of being in Omaha, isn't it? You once
Yeah.
you find that core group, you really embrace each other.
Right. And we looked out for each other and things like that. And, you know, that's just kind of how we sort of grew up.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think my background is that my parents are both from Germany, and they came over. My mother came over to the United States after the war when she was 15,
Oh, wow.
and she was a homemaker, she housekeeper for her great uncle, who owned a nursery and a floor shop in Council Bluffs. And my dad was 17 when he came over, and he went to Canada because he could not get into the United States after the war. And he lived up there for 4 years, and then he came down and was sponsored by a family in Omaha, a German family in Omaha, to come to
Okay.
the United States. So we don't have any relatives here
Yeah.
besides our parents and my brothers and sisters. And so our friends and their families sort of
Becomes that,
became
adopted
that.
family,
Yeah,
basically,
right.
yeah.
And so all the people that I grew up with in our neighborhoods, I'm still friendly with their parents if they're still alive, and the kids and everything,
Yeah.
right? And so we did a lot of things together, and that's kind of how you sort of I got sort of assimilated into the US was in sort of in that method and that way. So it was more than just like, hey, these are your friends. It was sort of like, this is like your extended family,
Absolutely,
right? So it's kind
yeah.
of a different environment to grow up in, but it's just how we did it.
Sure. Do you feel like that really influenced the way that you ran your business once you and Phil kind of
Yeah, I
took
think
off with this and said, okay, this is what we're doing
yeah,
now?
I think so to a certain extent, because I felt like any business partner that I was going to have, I had to really trust them and know them well.
Yeah.
It isn't just like, oh, I could work with anybody, because I sort of have this thing like, unless I really know you, I can be friendly with you, but I don't really
Sure.
know you that well. And so it takes me a while to get to know people sometimes. But I'm like, our people here at Lease Team, or LTI now, at least, it's hard for me to say. It's hard for me to
Been doing
say
that for
that.
30 years, that's
Yeah, right. Our
okay.
people here are just sort of like my extended family too,
Yeah.
okay? And when we started, we knew not only, you know, we had like seven or eight people, you know, six, seven people in our organization. I knew their spouses, I knew their kids, I knew their families. I
Right.
mean, it was just kind of like, that's just sort of how we developed our core culture here to a certain extent. And you know, since we've got larger here, it's not like I know everybody really well here, but I respect everybody here. But as we've sort of grown, we have things like we do here, like we're gonna have next week, I'm gonna be out, but you know, the chili thing,
Yeah.
or we have the cookouts, or we have the Christmas stuff for the kids. That's really important to us because it's a family type of thing, even though it's a larger company.
Yeah.
And we also have our ESOP and things like that, which I think is good for our employees, you know, long term, to own part of the company over a period of time. And you
Was the
know,
motivation for you for the ESOP, did that go? Do you feel like that goes back to your experience of being at Word and Data, where you were kind of a part owner of the company
yeah,
at the time?
I think it did to a certain extent, but I think, you know, Russ and I have talked about this a number of times, and that is that when you start and you're like six people, and Russ wasn't there at the time, but Phil and myself and four other people, it's like Phil and myself were probably the most important people that were there because we
Sure.
were working the hardest because we had the most invested.
Yeah,
Everybody else was
exactly.
just an employee, and they were leaving at 5 o'clock, and Phil and I were still there at 10 o'clock at night, you know?
Yeah.
And so you know, you just put sweat equity into it. But as you start growing and as you start bringing more people on, you quickly realize that just you can't do everything. You have to have really good people in order to grow the business. And it's those people that help you grow the business. So I think it's important that you honor them sort of in that way. You have to pay them, of course, and we want to pay them. But then you also, in order to achieve your goals and the growth that you want to have, you can't have a revolving door. Okay. I think there's two things that really the ESOP is good at. One is that it helps you retain really good talent here at the company. Not everybody, wants to be here or can be here or whatever, and they've all added to what we've done in life. But the people that you really want to keep, you want to keep here. And so you want to figure out a way to incentivize them, especially when you have a environment which is unemployment rates are like at 2.9%, right? So you gotta get people in here, and the work that they do is important for you. You gotta manage that properly, but then at the same time, it's the people that are helping us do what we need to do. This isn't the Russ and Randy show by any stretch. This is like Jeff started here back in support when he first started out of college. There's a number of people that started and they worked their way up, and I think we really believe in that. And so you want to take care of your people that have helped you get here. And so I think that ESOP has helped us do that. And I think it's something that I like because it fits in with my entrepreneurial spirit of having some ownership
Of course,
in your
yeah.
business, right? So entrepreneurship is I think in the era that we grew up in, I have a number of friends that own businesses, and maybe it's because we don't like to work for other people, but I think more of it's like we like to own our own thing and have the ability to grow that. Okay?
Yeah,
The
when you grow
challenge of
up
that.
around that, see that possibility and
Right.
how I think a lot of people that don't do that, it just don't grow up in that environment, so they don't
Right.
see like how is this even possible for me?
Right.
But for someone like you guys, where it's just natural, like, well, of course we can do this because it's just everybody around us did it. Like, it's just what you
Right,
do.
and it's really college helps you, but it's really more hard work, bootstrapping it, being smart, knowing what you can do, knowing what you can't do, getting out there on the limb sometimes and doing things you probably shouldn't do, but trying to work your way along. And I think over a long period of time, it's not for everybody because it's have to put in a tremendous amount of work. Your family sacrifices to a certain extent because you're gone a lot and you're working hard all the time. But it's just something that, like, even today, I look forward to getting out of bed every morning and coming down here. I really do. And some people are like that and some people aren't. And I don't say you're bad because you don't want to do that. But for me,
You just know what you like to do,
yeah, that's like that drives me. So. About the German people that I grew up with, at least the ones that my parents knew, I would say at least half of them were small business owners. So they owned a florist or a greenhouse. They knew how to work with their hands. They were carpenters. They were bricklayers. They were construction guys.
Yeah, very industrious people.
Very industrious, hardworking people. Not always the easiest people to get along with because they kind of let you know about things, but. And a lot of people that came over to the United States, especially a lot of ones that are in Omaha, most of them were in the trades. Okay? Because that was their training. They were trained over there, and then they came over here after the war, and they used their skills that they learned over there as tradespeople to work in the trades here. What they also figured out is maybe working for somebody like Kiewit is a good place to start, but then maybe a better thing to do would be to own their own smaller construction company and build houses and do different things like that. And what you saw was more people coming over that the Masons had friends that were framers, had friends that were roofers, and they were all from the same community, and then they built these communities together. But it was like all guys that knew each other from the trades.
Of course, yeah.
That's how they
Combine their skills and
combine
do
their
something
skills,
that, yeah.
and then off they go. They're doing things together. It's not like either Russ or not like myself, Phil or Russ came from a really wealthy family because we didn't. And so we weren't like, we had to bootstrap our business to start out with. And that's why it was small when we got started. And it was perfect for us to do that. Russ, Phil's family, his dad owned a commission company, a stockyard down at the livestock exchange.
Okay.
So he was buying cattle and, and doing things like that. So that's the background that Phil came from. And his dad owned a business down there. And my parents owned businesses and Russ's parents owned businesses. So it's like people with a small business background getting together to kind of start the company. So more elbow grease and sweat equity than,
right.
than, hey, we got a lot of money. Now let's go out and hire a bunch of people and do something here. We didn't start like that. We started the opposite end, which is sort of like, we know some things, we can work hard.
Mm-hmm.
We'll hire a few people because we have a little bit of money.
Yeah.
And then we'll start growing this thing. And it's hard to kind of grow a smaller company up to where it is today. But over time with good people, you can do it. There's a great history at LTI, and we're about relationships here. I know most of our customers personally. You know, it's just like back in the old neighborhood. It's like one of your neighbors isn't feeling well, or their grandma dies, or their grandma is sick. It's like, hey, you bring the food over to their house and make sure that they've got something so they can go tend to their relatives. It's not like you're there taking care of them, but you're taking care of the family so that they can do other things. And it's just a small thing like that that you learn when you're younger, that you can pass that along to other people. And those little things over time, they add up.